Narrative, Maya thought. Scratch the surface and we are all the same. There was no time or reason to ruminate on that right now. So my sister contacted you, Maya said, to protect me.
Yes.
Maya nodded. That made sense. Sad, terrible sense. The guilt came rushing back. So then what happened?
She convinced me of the righteousness of her argument.
A small smile toyed with his lips.
And I convinced her of the righteousness of mine.
I don't understand.
Claire worked for a big, corrupt corporation. She had access to the inner sanctum.
It was starting to click. You convinced her to leak information to you?
She saw the righteousness of the cause.
Maya had a thought.
What?
Was it quid pro quo? Maya asked. Did Claire agree to help take down Burkett Enterprises in exchange for you not releasing the audio?
Nothing so crude.
Or was it just that crude? So, Maya said, feeling the answer start to well up, you got Claire to do your dirty work. And it got her killed. A shadow crossed his face.
Not just Claire,
Corey said. What do you mean?
She worked with Joe.
Maya let that sink in a moment before she shook her head. There's no way Joe would turn in his own family.
Your sister apparently thought otherwise.
Maya closed her eyes.
Think about it. Claire looks into it. She ends up dead. Then Joe looks into it.
The connection, Maya thought. Everyone was looking for the connection. Corey thought that he knew what it was. But he was wrong.
Joe reached out to me after your sister died.
What did he say?
He wanted to meet.
And?
I couldn't. I had to stay off the grid. I'm sure you read about it. The Danish government was trying to nail me on trumped-up charges. I told him that I could find secure ways to communicate, but he wanted to meet in person. I think he wanted to help. And I think he found a secret that got him killed.
What were Claire and Joe supposed to be investigating?
Financial crimes.
Can you be more specific?
You know the phrase that behind every great fortune is a crime? It's true. Oh, I'm sure you could find exceptions, but scratch the surface behind every major corporation and someone got paid off or someone intimidated the competition.
And in this case?
The Burkett family has a long history of paying off top politicians in this country and abroad. Do you remember the case of the pharmaceutical company Ranbaxy?
Vaguely, Maya said. Fraudulent drugs or something.
Close enough. The Burkettes are doing something similar over in Asia with one of their pharmaceutical holdings called EAC. People are dying because the drugs don't meet specifications, but so far the Burkettes have managed to hide behind claims of local incompetence. In short, they claim that they didn't know anything, that their testing was sound, whatever. It's all lies. They fabricated data, we are sure of it.
But you couldn't prove it, Maya said.
Exactly. We needed someone from the inside to get the data.
So you sent in Claire.
Nobody forced her, Maya.
No, you charmed.
Don't insult your sister's intelligence. She knew the risks. She was brave. I didn't make her. She wanted to do the right thing. You, of all people, should understand that she died trying to expose injustice.
Don't, Maya said.
What?
She hated when people made comparisons to soldiers in war. They always managed to be both patronizing and inept. But again, now was not the time. So your theory is that someone in Joe's family killed Claire, and then Joe, to hush up exposure?
What, you think they're above it?
Maya thought about that. They might not be above killing Claire, she said, but they'd never kill one of their own.
You may be right.
He rubbed his face with his hand and looked off. From the other room, Maya could hear the song Be Our Guest from Beauty and the Beast, adding new meaning to the line, put our service to the test.
But, he continued, I think Claire found something else. Something bigger than manipulating a drug test.
Like what? He shrugged.
I don't know. Lulu told me you found her burner phone.
Yes.
I won't go through how the machinations of our communications worked, how the calls here can be rerouted via the dark web and eventually find their way to me. But still, we had agreed on radio silence. We would only communicate when she was ready to give me the final material or if there was an emergency.
Maya leaned forward. But Claire did reach out.
Yes, a few days before her death.
What did she say?
That she'd found something.
Something other than drug tampering? He nodded.
Something potentially bigger, he said. She said she was still putting it together, but she wanted to send me the first piece of evidence.
He stopped, stared ahead with his pale blue eyes.
It was the last time we spoke.
Did she send you that first piece of evidence? He nodded.
That's why you're here.
What? But she knew, of course. He had known where she was the entire time, that she had visited the club, that she had talked to Lulu, that she was following him. Corey Rudzinski had not set this up casually. There had been a purpose to all of this.
You're here, he said, so I can show you what Claire found. The name is Tom Douglas. Two S's.
Corey handed her the printout. They were still in the private back room at the strip club. This was a pretty great spot for a clandestine meeting. No one paid you any attention, and no one wanted you to pay any to them.
Does the name mean anything to you?
Corey asked. Should it? Corey shrugged.
Just a general question.
Never heard of him, Maya said. So who is he? According to the printout, there were monthly payments to Tom Douglas Security for $9,000. Maya noted the obvious. It was the same amount as the purported secret payments to Roger Kearse. Coincidence?
Tom Douglas worked as a private investigator in a New Jersey town called Livingston. His business was a small one-man operation. He mostly did marital work and background checks. He retired 3 years ago, but the money is still coming.
So maybe it's legitimate. He's a private eye on retainer. He retired, but kept his biggest client.
I would agree. Except your sister clearly thought that there was more to it.
Like what? Corey shrugged. How could you not have asked her?
You don't understand how we work.
Oh, I think I do. So when Claire got murdered over this, did you contact the police?
No.
Or tell them what she was investigating?
I told you I had to stay off the grid when she died.
Not died, Maya said. She was brutalized and murdered.
I know. Believe me, I get it.
But not enough to help find her killer.
Our sources demand confidentiality.
But your source was murdered.
That doesn't change our commitment to her.
Ironic, Maya said.
How so?
You're so big on a world without secrets, but you have no problem creating and keeping your own. What about your everything out in the open utopia?
That's not fair, Maya. We didn't even know her murder was connected to us.
Sure you did. You kept quiet because you were afraid if it got out that one of your sources was murdered, it would reflect badly on you. You were afraid that someone leaked her name and that got her killed. You were afraid, and probably still are, that maybe that leak came from your organization.
It didn't, Corey said.
How do you know?
You talked about our paranoia, our overkill. I'm the only one who knew about Claire. We have safeguards. There is no way her name was leaked by my organization.
You know the public wouldn't buy that. He put his hand on his face.
They might misinterpret, that's true.
They'd blame you.
Our enemies might use it against us. Our other whistleblowers might feel threatened.
Maya shook her head. You really don't see, do you?
What? You're justifying keeping secrets. You're doing exactly the same thing as those governments and businesses you condemn. That's not true. Sure it is. Protect the institution at all cost. You got my sister killed, and you helped her killer go free to shield your organization.
Something ignited behind his eyes.
Maya? What? I don't need lectures on morality from you.
Fair enough. Maya had agitated him, perhaps too much. That was a mistake. She needed him to trust her. So why are the Burkettes paying Tom Douglas?
We have no idea. A few months ago, we hacked into Douglas's computer, checked his browsing history, even got a list of his searches. There's no hint. Whatever he was doing, it wasn't just off the books. It was way off the books.
Did you try asking him?
Oh, he won't talk to us. And if the police question him, he'll claim attorney-client privilege. All his work product goes through the family law firm, Howell and Lamy.
That was Heather Howell's firm. So how do we find out more? Maya asked.
We took a run at him and got nowhere,
Corey said.
So I was thinking, maybe you could give it a try.
Chapter 15. Unlike in the movies, Tom Douglas' investigations didn't have pebbled glass with the name stenciled into it. The office was located in a nondescript brick building on Northfield Avenue in Livingston, New Jersey. The corridor smelled like a dentist's office, which seemed apt based on the number of names listed with a DDS by the entrance. Maya knocked on the solid wood door. No answer. She tried the knob. Locked. She noticed a man in hospital scrubs standing by the reception desk across the corridor. He was checking her out with the subtlety of a sledgehammer. She returned the smile, pointed at the door, and shrugged. Scrubs walked toward her.
You have great teeth, he said.
Gee, wow, thanks. Maya feigned breathless, kept the smile going. Do you know when Mr. Douglas will be back?
You need some investigation help, hun? Hun.
Sort of. It's confidential. She bit her lower lip as if to indicate seriousness, and yeah, okay, maybe a little coquettishness. Have you seen him today?
I haven't seen Tom in weeks. Must be nice, just being able to take time off like that.
Maya thanked him and headed toward the exit. Scrubs called after her. She ignored him and picked up her pace. Corey had provided her with Tom Douglas's home address. It was only a 5-minute drive. She would try there. The Douglas house was a much-loved Cape Cod, blue with purple trim. The flower boxes burst with color. The shutters were overly decorative. It was all a bit much, but it worked. Maya parked in the street and started up the walk. A fishing boat on a wheeled rig sat on the side of the garage. Maya knocked on the door. A woman in her mid-50s wearing a black sweatsuit opened it. The woman's eyes narrowed.
May I help you?
Hi, Maya said, trying to sound upbeat. I'm looking for Tom Douglas. The woman, Maya assumed it was Mrs. Douglas, kept studying Maya's face.
He's not here.
Do you know when he'll be back?
Could be a while.
My name is Maya Stern.
Yeah, the woman said. I recognize you from the news. What do you want with my husband?
Great question. Can I come in? Mrs. Douglas stepped back to let her enter. Maya really hadn't meant to ask about coming inside. She had just been buying time, trying to figure out the best way to approach it. Mrs. Douglas led her past the foyer and into the den. The theme there was nautical, big time. Stuffed fish hung from the ceiling on wires. The wood-paneled walls were decorated with antique fishing rods and fishing nets and an old captain's wheel and round life preservers. There were family photos involving the seas. Maya spotted two sons, both of whom must have been grown by now. This family of four clearly liked to fish together. Maya had never been much for fishing, but she'd noticed over the years that there were few photographed smiles as bright and authentic as those taken with caught fish. Mrs. Douglas folded her arms and waited. The best approach, Maya quickly surmised, would be the direct one. Your husband has done work for the Burkett family for a long time. Blank face. I wanted to ask him about what he does.
I see, Mrs. Douglas said.
Do you know about his work with the Burketts?
You're a Burkett, Maya, aren't you?
The question rocked Maya back a bit. I married in, I guess.
That's what I thought. And I saw that your husband was killed.
Yes.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Then,
do you think Tom knows something about the murder?
Again, her bluntness threw Maya. I don't know.
But that's why you're here.
In part? Mrs. Douglas nodded.
I'm sorry, but I really don't know anything.
I'd like to talk to Tom.
He's not around.
Where is he?
Away.
She started back toward the door. My sister was also murdered, Maya said. Mrs. Douglas slowed her step. Her name was Claire Walker. Does that name mean anything to you?
Should it?
Right before she was killed, she found out about the Burkett's secret payments to your husband.
Secret payments? I don't know what you're trying to imply here, but I think you better leave.
What kind of work does Tom do for them?
I wouldn't know.
I have your tax returns for the past 5 years. Now it was Mrs. Douglas's turn to show surprise.
You... what?
More than half your husband's yearly income has come from the Burketts. The payments are substantial.
So? Tom works hard.
Doing what?
I wouldn't know, and if I did, I certainly wouldn't say.
Something about those payments troubled my sister, Mrs. Douglas. A few days after Claire found out about them, someone tortured her and shot her in the head. Her mouth made a perfect O.
And you think, what, Tom had something to do with it?
I didn't say that.
My husband is a good man. He, like you, served in the military.
She nodded toward the wall behind her. Beneath a plaque that read Semper Paratus were silver-crossed anchors, the symbol of the esteemed bosun's mate. Maya had known a few BMs in the Navy. It was a proud distinction.
Tom worked as a town cop for almost 2 decades. He took early retirement after getting hurt on the job. He opened up his own firm, and he works hard.
So what did he do for the Burketts?
I told you I wouldn't know.
Or say?
That's right.
But whatever he did for them was worth 9 or 10 grand a month going back how long?
I wouldn't know.
You don't know when he started with them?
His work was confidential.
He never talked about the Burketts? For the first time, Maya saw a chink in the woman's armor as she said softly,
never.
Where is he, Mrs. Douglas?
He's away. And I don't know anything.
She flung open the door.
I'll let him know you stopped by.
Chapter 16. Most people have a pretty antiquated idea of what a shooting range / gun shop looks like. They picture musty animal taxidermy and bear pelts on the walls, dusty rifles lined up haphazardly, a cantankerous owner behind a counter wearing either early Elmer Fudd hunting gear or a wife-beater t-shirt with a hook for one hand. That wasn't the case anymore. Maya, Shane, and their compatriots hung out at a state-of-the-art gun club called RTSP, which stood for Right to Self-Protect, or, as some joked, Right to Shoot People. Forget dust. Everything in here gleamed like new. The unfailingly solicitous employees all donned black polo shirts neatly tucked into khakis. The weaponry was laid out in glass cases like fine jewelry. There were 20 shooting ports altogether, 10 for the 25-yard range shooter, 10 for the 15-yarders. A digital simulator worked pretty much like a life-sized video game. Picture a theater room with some sort of hostile situation, gang attack, hostage-taking, Wild West, even zombie infiltration, come to life with fully formed targets coming at you. You shot lasers with a real weight firearm. For the most part, Maya came to shoot real guns at paper targets and hang with her friends, most of whom had served in the military. This place served that purpose in what their advertisements called comfort and style. Some people joined clubs to golf or play tennis or try their hand at bridge. Maya was a VIP member of the Guntry Club. Being ex-military, she and her friends had been given a 50% discount. The Guntry Club on Route 10 had dark wood walls and rich carpeting and reminded Maya of either a faux version of the Burkett Library or an upscale chain steakhouse. A pool table sat in the middle of the room. There was lots of leather furniture. Three walls were adorned with flat-screen televisions. The fourth was painted with the words of the Second Amendment, spelled out in enormous cursive letters. There was a cigar room, card tables, and free Wi-Fi. Rick, the owner, also wore the black polo and khakis and always had a gun on his belt. He greeted her with a sad smile and a fist bump.
"Great to have you back, Maya. Me and the boys, when we heard the news."
She nodded. "Thanks for the flowers."
"We just wanted to do something, you know."
"I appreciate it." Rick coughed into his fist.
"I don't know if this is the right time to raise it, but if you need a job now with more flexible hours."
Rick was constantly offering her a job teaching shooting classes. Women were the fastest growing demographic for gun buyers and ranges like his. Women also greatly preferred female instructors, of which there were still very few. "I'll keep it in mind," Maya said.
"Great. The boys are upstairs."
There were five of the gang there that night, including Shane and Maya. The other three headed off to the simulator, while Shane and Maya hit the 25-yard range. Maya found zen in shooting. There was something about the release of breath as you pulled the trigger, the stillness, the quiet before the almost welcome recoil that soothed and comforted her. When they were done, they moved back up to the VIP room. Maya was the only woman. One might think that sexism would rule a place like this, but here, all that mattered was how good you shot. Maya's military notoriety, if not heroism, also made her something of a local celebrity. Some of the guys were awed by her. Some harbored small-time crushes. It didn't bother Maya. Despite what you might read, most soldiers were greatly respectful of women. In her case, they seemed to channel whatever feelings of attraction they possessed into something more chaste or brotherly. Maya's eyes skimmed over the words of the Second Amendment on the wall. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Awkward grammar, to put it mildly. Maya had learned never to discuss or argue with those on either side. Her father, who had been adamantly anti-gun, used to snap,
"You want your big assault rifle? What well-regulated militia are you with anyway?"
While her pro-gun friends would always counter,
"What part of shall not be infringed is confusing to you?"
It was, of course, amazingly elastic phraseology, and proved the adage that everyone always sees what's in their interest. If you loved guns, you found this document to mean one thing. If you hated guns, you thought it meant another. Shane grabbed Maya a Coke. Alcohol was not allowed there because even the least rational among them realized that guns and alcohol don't mix. The five of them sat around and started shooting the breeze. The conversations always started with the local sports team, but quickly moved into deeper terrain. This was the best part for Maya. She was one of them, except she was maybe a bit more. The guys often sought out the female perspective because, newsflash, war messes up your relationships at home. It was a cheap cop-out for a soldier to say that nobody at home understood what he was going through, but it was also too damned apt. After you serve in some hellhole, you just see things differently. Sometimes it's in obvious ways, but more often, it's just about textures and hues and scents. Things that used to matter don't, and vice versa. Relationships and marriages are hard enough, but you add war into the mix, and small fissures become gaping wounds. No one sees what you're seeing. Again, that clear-eyed, unbiased thing. Except your fellow soldiers. It's like one of those movies where only the hero can see the ghosts, and everyone else thinks the hero is crazy. In this room, they all saw the ghosts. Being single and somewhat emotionally challenged, Shane wasn't good with the confessional stuff. He moved over to the seat in the corner, took out the new novel by Anna Quinlan, and started reading. Shane was a big reader, except, as Maya had seen the other night, out loud to children, and could read anywhere, even on that chopper where the rotors were so loud they seemed to be coming from inside her brain. Eventually, Maya migrated toward him. The TV above their head showed the third quarter of the New York Knicks-Brooklyn Nets game. Shane put down the book as she approached. He swung his long legs up on the leather ottoman and said,
"Cool."
"What?"
"I assume you're ready to fill me in now."
She wasn't. She wanted to protect him. Always. Still, Shane wouldn't take that as an answer, and it would be unfair and perhaps detrimental to give him nothing. She debated telling him about meeting Corey Rudzinski in the flesh, but she had no idea how he would react. With anger, probably. Corey had also been very specific in the end.
"No burner phones. We only communicate if there is an emergency. If you need me, call the club and ask for Lulu. If I need you, the club will call your phone and hang up. That'll be your signal to come back here. But Maya, if I feel slightly uneasy, I'm gone. Probably for good. So say nothing."
Say nothing. That felt like the right play for now. If she blew that relationship, Corey would likely disappear. She couldn't risk that. But there was another avenue she could take. Shane stared at her and waited. He could do that all night. "What do you know about Kearse?" Maya asked him.
"The homicide cop working Joe's case?"
Maya nodded.
"Not much. He's got a solid reputation, but it's not like we hang out with the NYPD. Why?"
"You remember Joe's sister, Caroline?"
"Right."
"She told me that the family has been giving Kearse money." Shane made a face.
"What do you mean, giving him money?"
"Just under 10 grand, 3 times.
"For what?"
Maya shrugged. "She doesn't know." She filled him in on what Caroline had told her about the payoffs, about her password not working, about Maya's decision to wait before she confronted Neil or Judith.
"It makes no sense," Shane said.
"Why the hell would Joe's family want to bribe Kearse?"
"You tell me," Maya said. He considered that for a moment.
"We both know the rich are weird."
"We do."
"But are they paying Kearse in hopes he'll, what, do a better job? Make Joe's case a priority? It already is. Do the Burkettes think they should tip a cop or something?"
"I don't know," Maya said. "But there's something more."
"What?"
"Caroline claims that the family started paying Kearse before Joe died."
"Bullshit."
"That's what she thinks."
"She's wrong. It doesn't even make sense. Why would they give Kearse money before the murder?"
Again, Maya said, "I don't know."
"It's not like, what, they predicted Joe would get murdered and which detective would work the case?"
Shane shook his head.
"You know what the most likely answer is, don't you?"
"No."
"Caroline is playing you."
Maya had considered that.
"Come on, that whole part with her going online in front of you and suddenly, gasp, the password has changed? That seems awfully convenient, doesn't it?"
"It does," Maya agreed.
"So she's lying. Wait, strike that."
"What?" Shane turned toward her.
"Caroline is a first-class flake, right?"
"Of the highest order."
"So maybe she's not lying,"
Shane said, warming up to his new theory.
"Maybe she just imagined the whole thing. Put the pieces together. You have this first-class flake. Her brother is murdered. You all meet to discuss the will. Then that gets canceled because of, what, some paperwork snafu?"
Not just a snafu, Maya said. There's something wrong with his death certificate.
Even better. So she's under stress.
Maya frowned. So she imagined seeing payments to a homicide cop?
It's as likely as any other scenario right now.
Shane sat back.
Maya?
She knew what was coming.
Can you stop it, please?
He said. Stop what? He frowned.
It makes my tummy hurt when you lie to me.
I'm not lying to you.
Semantics. What aren't you telling me?
Too much, probably. Again, she debated telling him more, but again, she had the knee-jerk reaction of protecting him. She considered telling him about Claire's secret phone, but that would just lead to Corey. She didn't want to go there yet. She hadn't told him about what she had seen on the nanny cam either, but that could wait too. Always better to be cautious. Things can always be said later, but things can never be unheard. Shane leaned close, made sure nobody could hear, and then whispered,
Where did you get that bullet?
You need to leave that alone.
I did you a huge favor.
And your favors come with strings, Shane? That stung him into silence, as she had known it would. She moved the topic back to Caroline. You said something interesting about Caroline being under stress, Maya said. Shane waited. She didn't just talk about Joe. She talked about her other brother.
Neil?
Maya shook her head. Andrew. Shane made a face.
Wait, the one who fell off the boat?
He didn't fall.
What do you mean?
Finally, something she felt safe confiding in him. Joe was there, on the boat with him.
Right, so?
So Joe told me it wasn't an accident. He said Andrew committed suicide. Shane fell back in the chair.
Yowza.
Yeah.
Does the family know?
Maya shrugged. I don't think so. They all claim it was an accident.
And Caroline raised this yesterday?
Yep.
Why?
Shane asked.
Andrew Burkett died, what, nearly 20 years ago, right?
In a way, I think it was natural, Maya said.
How so?
Two brothers, supposedly very close, both dying young and tragically. Shane nodded, seeing it now.
More reason why her imagination might get the better of her.
And she never saw Joe's body.
Come again?
Caroline, she never saw Joe's body or Andrew's. She wanted that. For closure. So Andrew dies at sea. She never sees his corpse. Joe gets murdered. She never sees his either.
I don't get it,
Shane said.
Why didn't she see Joe's?
The family wouldn't let her or something. I don't know. But look at it from her viewpoint. Two dead brothers, and no dead bodies. Caroline never saw either one of them in a casket. They fell into silence, but Shane saw it now. Caroline had hit a nerve when she talked to Maya about the need for a body. Maya and Shane had seen it time and time again during their time overseas. When a soldier died in battle, his family often couldn't accept the death until they saw definitive proof. The dead body. Maybe Caroline was right. Maybe that was the real origin of why soldiers make sure to bring everyone, even the dead, home. Shane broke the silence.
So Caroline is having trouble accepting Joe's death.
She's having trouble accepting both deaths, Maya said.
And she thinks the man who is investigating Joe's murder is being paid off by her family.
That was when it hit Maya so hard, she almost fell over. Oh no.
What?
Maya swallowed. She tried to think it through, tried to organize her thoughts. The boat, the captain's wheel, the fishing trophies. Semper paratus, she said.
What?
Maya met Shane's eye. Semper paratus.
It's Latin, Shane said. It means always ready.
You know it? The boat, the fishing trophies, the captain's wheel and life preservers, but mostly the crossed anchors. Maya had assumed the crossed anchors meant the Navy. They often do. But someone else uses crossed anchors to award their bosun's mates. Shane nodded,
It's the motto of the Coast Guard.
The Coast Guard. The branch of the armed forces with jurisdiction in both international and domestic waters. The Coast Guard could claim jurisdiction in any death on the high seas.
Maya?
She turned to him. I need another favor, Shane. He said nothing. I need you to find out who the lead investigator was in the maritime death of Andrew Burkett, she said. I need you to see if it was a Coast Guard officer named Tom Douglas. Chapter 17. Putting Lily to sleep was usually a routine task. Maya had heard all the horror stories about little kids who made bedtime a nightmare. Not Lily. It was as though she'd had enough of the day and was ready to just put it behind her. Her head hit the pillow without argument and poof, sleep. But tonight, after Maya tucked her into bed, Lily said,
Story.
Maya was exhausted, but wasn't this one of the joys of motherhood? Sure, sweetie. What would you like to read? Lily pointed to a Debbie Gliori book. Maya read it to her, hoping it would work like hypnosis or a boring coworker, and Lily's eyes would get droopy before closing for the night. But the book was having the opposite of the intended effect. Maya was the one drifting off while Lily poked her to stay awake. Maya managed to finish the story. She closed the book, started to rise, and Lily said,
Again. Again.
I think it's time to go to sleep, sweetie. Lily started crying.
Scared.
Maya knew that you weren't supposed to let your child stay in your room during moments like this, but what those parental instructional manuals forget is that all human beings, even parents, will take the easier way out when exhausted. This little girl had lost her father. She was too young to get that, of course, but there still had to be something there, some subconscious pang, some primitive knowledge that all was not right. Maya scooped Lily up. Come on, you can sleep with me. She carried Lily and gently set her down on Joe's side of the bed. She laid out pillows along the edge of the bed in a makeshift rail, and then to be on the safe side, threw a bunch more on the floor in case Lily somehow rolled through this tenuous barricade. Maya pulled the covers up and tucked them under Lily's chin, and as she did, Maya had one of those sudden pow moments sneak up on her, the one all parents experience, when you are simply overwhelmed by your love for your child, when you are awestruck and you can feel something rising inside of you and you just want to hold on to it, and yet at the same time, that caring, that fear of losing this person scares you into near paralysis. How, you wonder, will you ever relax again, knowing how unsafe the world is? Lily closed her eyes and fell asleep. Maya stayed there, unmoving, watching her daughter's little face, making sure the breaths were deep and even. She stayed that way until, mercifully, her mobile phone rang and broke the spell. She hoped that it might be Shane with an answer on Tom Douglas, though he'd told her that he wouldn't be able to look into the man's military records until the morning. She grabbed the phone and saw her niece Alexa's name pop up. In a small panic, here too was another person she could never lose. Maya quickly hit the green button. Everything okay?
Yeah,
Alexa said.
Why wouldn't it be?
No reason. Man, Maya needed to calm the hell down. What's up, kiddo? You need help with your homework?
Right. And if I did, you think I'd call you?
Maya laughed. Good point.
Tomorrow is soccer day.
Excuse me?
It's the lame thing we do in our town, where all the grades have a game and they sell booster stuff, and there's a moon bounce and a carnival and all that. I mean, it's fun for the little kids.
Okay.
I know you said you were busy, but I was hoping you and Lily could come.
Oh.
Dad and Daniel will be there too. His game is at 10, mine's at 11. We can take Lily around, get her a balloon animal. Mr. Ronkowitz, my English teacher, makes them for all the little kids. Take her on the rides. I thought it might be fun. We miss her.
Maya looked over at Lily sleeping next to her. The overwhelmed feeling returned in force.
Aunt Maya?
Alexa and Daniel were Lily's cousins. Lily adored them. Maya wanted them, needed them, to be a big part of Lily's life. I'm glad Lily's already asleep, Maya said to Alexa.
Huh?
Because if I told her she was going to see her cousins tomorrow, she would be too excited to go anywhere near her bed. Alexa laughed.
Great. See you in the morning? It's at the town circle.
Right.
Oh, and just FYI, my stupid coach will be there.
No worries. I think the two of us get each other now.
Good night, Aunt Maya.
Good night, Alexa. The night was bad. The sounds began their assault when Maya was in that gentle cusp between consciousness and sleep. The clamoring, the screams, the rotors, and the gunfire were relentless. They would not pause. They would not let up. They grew louder and stayed. Maya wasn't in her bed. She wasn't back there either. She was in this in-between world, suspended, lost. All was darkness and noise, unceasing, endless noise, the type of noise that seemed to come from within her, as though some small creature had climbed inside her head and started screeching and scratching from within. There was no escape, no rational thought. There was no here or now, no yesterday or tomorrow. That would all come later. Right now, there was nothing but the agony of the sounds shredding through her brain like a reaper's scythe. Maya put her hands on either side of her head and pushed hard as though trying to crush her own skull. It was that bad. It was the type of bad that made you want to do anything to please, oh God, please, make it stop. It made you think about picking up a gun and silencing the sounds. If you knew where you were, if you knew that you were so close to your bedside table where you kept a gun in that small safe. Maya didn't know if it lasted minutes or hours. It seemed endless. Time had no meaning when the sounds suffocated you. You just rode it out and tried to stay afloat. But at some point, a new sound, a more regular sound, penetrated her auditory hell. The sound seemed to come from a great distance. The sound seemed to take a long time to reach her and register. It had to fight through the other deafening sounds, one of which Maya realized as she started to float up toward consciousness was her own self screaming. A doorbell. Then a voice.
Maya? Maya?
Shane. He started banging against the door.
Maya?
She opened her eyes. The sounds didn't flee so much as mockingly fade away, reminding her that they might grow quiet, but they were always there, always with her. Maya again thought about that theory that no sound dies, that if you scream in the woods and you hear an echo, that echo just grows fainter and fainter, but never completely goes away. Her sounds did the same. They never fully left her. Maya looked to her right, to where Lily had been sleeping. But she wasn't there. Maya's heart leapt into her throat. Lily? The knocking and doorbell had stopped. Maya bolted upright. She swung her legs out of bed. When she tried to stand, the head rush knocked her back into a seating position. Lily? She called again. From downstairs, Maya heard the door open.
Maya?
It was Shane, inside the house now. She'd given him a key for emergencies.
Up here!
Maya tried again, making it to a standing position this time.
Lily? I can't find Lily!
The house shook as Shane ran up the stairs, two at a time.
Lily?
I got her, Shane said.
He appeared at her door, carrying Lily with his right arm. Relief flooded Maya's veins.
She was at the top of the stairs, Shane said.
There were tears on Lily's face. Maya hurried over to her. Lily cringed for a moment, and Maya realized that her daughter had probably woken up to her mother's screams. Maya slowed down and made herself smile.
It's okay, sweetie.
The little girl buried her face into Shane's shoulder.
I'm sorry, Lily. Mommy had a nightmare.
Lily wrapped her arms around Shane's neck. Shane looked toward Maya, not even trying to hide the pity and concern on his face. Maya's heart crumbled into a million pieces.
I tried to call, he said. When you didn't answer,
Maya nodded.
Hey,
Shane said too cheerfully. He wasn't good with cheerful. Even Lily could sense that his tone was off.
Let's all go downstairs and have breakfast. What do you say?
Lily looked wary, but she was also recovering quickly. That was the thing about kids. They are ridiculously resilient. They have, Maya thought, the coping skills of the best soldiers.
Oh, guess what? Maya said.
Lily looked at her mother warily.
Today, we're going to a carnival with Daniel and Alexa.
That made the little girl's eyes widen.
There'll be rides and balloons.
Maya kept talking about the wonders of soccer day, and in a matter of minutes, the storm of last night dissipated in the glow of a new day. For Lily, at least. But for Maya, the grip of fear, especially because it had obviously touched her daughter, held on to her for far too long. What had she done? Shane didn't ask her if she was okay. He knew. Once they had Lily settled in front of her breakfast and moved out of her earshot, Shane said,
How bad?
I'm fine.
Shane just turned away.
What?
Lying to me gets easier and easier for you.
He was right.
Very bad, she said. Happy now?
Shane turned back to her. He wanted to hug her, she could see that. But they didn't do that. Too bad. She could have used it.
You need to talk to someone,
Shane said.
What about Wu?
Wu was the shrink from the VA.
I'll call him.
When?
When this is over.
When what is over?
She didn't answer.
It's not just about you anymore, Maya.
Meaning?
He looked over at Lily.
Low blow, Shane.
Too bad. You have a daughter you're raising on your own now.
I'll take care of it.
Maya checked the time. 9:15. She tried to remember the last time that had happened, when she had slept past 4:58 a.m., but she couldn't. She also wondered about Lily.
So what had gone on?
Had her daughter woken up and listened to her mother scream? Had Lily tried to wake her? Or did she just cower in fear? What kind of mother was she?
Death follows you, Maya.
I'll take care of it, she said again. I just need to see this through.
And by see this through, you mean find out who killed Joe?
She didn't reply.
You were right, by the way,
Shane said.
About?
That's why I'm here. You asked me to look into Tom Douglas's time in the Coast Guard.
And?
He served 14 years. That's where he got his first taste of law enforcement. And yes, he was the officer in charge of the investigation into the death of Andrew Burkett.
Boom. It made sense.
It made no sense. Do you know what his findings were?
Accidental death. According to his report, Andrew Burkett fell overboard at night and drowned. Alcohol was probably involved.
They just stood there for a few moments and let it sink in.
What the hell is going on, Maya?
I don't know, but I plan to find out.
How?
Maya quickly took out her mobile phone and called the Douglas home. There was no answer. Maya left a message.
I know why the Burkettes were paying you. Call me.
She left her cell phone number and hung up.
How did you find out about Douglas?
Shane asked.
It isn't important.
Really?
Shane stood up and started pacing. You didn't have to know him as well as Maya did to realize that this wasn't good.
What?
She said.
I called Detective Kearse this morning.
Maya closed her eyes.
Why would you do that?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you threw out a pretty big accusation last night?
It was Caroline's accusation.
Whatever. I wanted to size him up a little.
And?
I like him. I think he's a straight shooter. I think Caroline is full of crap.
Okay, just forget it. Shane made an annoying buzzing sound, like a game show effect when you give the wrong answer. What?
Sorry, Maya. Wrong answer.
What are you talking about?
Kearse wouldn't share any information on the actual investigation with me, Shane continued, which is what a good cop, a cop who plays by the rules and doesn't take bribes, would do.
Maya didn't like where this was going.
But,
Shane said, raising a finger in the air,
he felt that it would be okay to let me know about a certain incident that happened in your home recently.
Maya glanced over at Lily. He told you about the nanny cam.
Bingo.
Shane waited for her to explain. She didn't. They both stood there and stared at each other for too long. Shane broke the silence.
Why wouldn't you tell me something like that?
He asked. I was going to.
But?
But you already think I'm unstable. Shane made the annoying buzzing noise again.
Wrong. I may think you need help.
Exactly. You're all over me to call Wu. And what would you have thought if I told you I thought I saw my murdered husband on a nanny cam?
I would have listened, Shane said. I would have listened and tried to help you get to the bottom of it.
She knew that he meant it. Shane grabbed a chair, moved it close to her, sat down.
Tell me what happened. Exactly.
No point in hiding it anymore. She told Shane about the nanny cam, about Isabella using pepper spray, about Joe's missing clothes and her visit to the Burkett workers' compound where Isabella lived. When she was finished, Shane said,
I remember that shirt. If you imagined it all, why would it be missing?
Who knows? Shane rose and started for the stairs. Where are you going?
I'm going to check his closet, see if it's there.
She was going to protest, but this was how Shane was. He had to play it all the way through. She waited. He came back 5 minutes later.
Gone,
he said. Which doesn't mean anything, Maya added. A million reasons a shirt wouldn't be in his closet. Shane sat back across from her and plucked his lower lip. 5 seconds passed. Then 10.
Let's talk it out for a bit.
Maya just waited.
You remember what General Dempsey said when he visited camp?
Shane asked.
About predictability in the theater?
She nodded. General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had said that of all human endeavors, the one that is most unpredictable is warfare. The only cardinal rule about what happens in battle is that you never know what will happen in battle. You have to be ready for what seems impossible.
So let's play it through, Shane said. Let's say that you really did see Joe on that nanny cam.
He's dead, Shane.
I get that, but just let's go step by step, just as an exercise.
She rolled her eyes for him to get on with it.
Okay, so you look at this nanny cam on what, your TV?
Laptop. You plug in an SD card.
Right, sorry, the SD card. That's the one Isabella took after she sprayed you?
Yes.
Okay, so you put this SD card into your laptop. You see Joe playing with Lily on the couch. Let's eliminate the obvious. It wasn't like an old recording, right?
Right.
Are you sure? You said Eileen gave the nanny cam to you after the funeral. But could someone have put in an old recording or something? A tape someone made of the two of them before Joe was killed?
No. Lily was wearing exactly what she was wearing that day. It was filmed at the exact right angle, taken from that very spot on the shelf and aimed at the couch. There was a trick to it, sure, had to be. Joe was, I don't know, photoshopped or something. But it wasn't an old piece of film.
Okay, so we've eliminated that possibility.
This was getting ridiculous. What possibility?
That it was an old tape. So let's try something else.
Shane started plucking his lip again.
Let's pretend, just for the sake of argument, that it really was Joe. That he's still alive.
Shane held up his hands, even though she hadn't said anything.
I know, but just bear with me, okay?
Maya bit back the sigh and shrugged a suit yourself.
How would you do it?
He asked.
If you were Joe and you wanted to fake your death.
Fake my death and then what, sneak into my house and play with my kid? I don't know, Shane. Why don't you tell me? You obviously have a theory.
Not a theory, exactly, but...
Does it involve zombies?
Maya?
Yes?
You use sarcasm when you're being defensive.
She frowned. Those psych courses, she said. They are really paying off.
I don't know what you're so afraid of here.
I'm afraid of wasting my time. But okay, Shane, forget zombies. Give me your theory. How would you fake your death if you were Joe? Shane kept plucking at his lip. Maya was afraid he might draw blood.
Here is how I might do it, he said. I might hire two street punks. I might give them guns with blanks.
Wow, Maya said.
Just let me finish, but I'll skip the mites if you don't mind. I, Joe, would set it up. I would have blood capsules or something like that so it looks real. Joe was the one who liked that spot in the park, right? He knew the lighting situation. He knew it would be dark enough so you wouldn't see exactly what was going on. Think about it. Do you really believe those two punks just happened to be there? Wasn't that odd to you?
Wait, that's the part you find odd?
That whole robbery angle.
Shane shook his head.
It always felt like nonsense to me.
Maya sat there. Kearse had already proven that the robbery angle was nonsense when the ballistics test told him that the same gun had killed both Joe and Claire. Obviously, Shane didn't know that.
Suppose it was all a setup,
Shane said, warming up to his outlandish conspiracy theory.
Suppose these two punks were hired to fire blanks and make it look like Joe was dead.
Shane?
Yes.
You realize how crazy that sounds, right? He kept plucking that lower lip. The cops were there too, Shane, remember? People saw the body.
Okay, let's take that one at a time. First off, the people who saw the body. Sure, if you were the only witness, it wouldn't be enough. So Joe lies there with the fake blood or whatever, in the dark. A few people see him. It's not like they took his pulse or anything.
Maya shook her head. Are you kidding?
Do you see a problem with my theory?
Where to begin? Maya countered. What about the cops? He spread his hands.
Didn't you yourself tell me that a payoff had been made?
To Kearse, you mean? Your new buddy who you liked and seemed to follow the rules?
I could be wrong about him. Wouldn't be the first time. And maybe Kearse made sure he was on duty when the murder happened. If it was a setup, Joe would know the when and where. So Kearse made sure his name came up in the rotation. Or maybe, I don't know, the Burkettes also paid off the chief or captain or whatever, so Kearse's name came up and he was first on the scene.
You should make one of those YouTube conspiracy tapes, Shane. Was 9/11 an inside job, too?
I'm giving you possibilities, Maya.
So let me get this straight, she said. They were all in on it. The punk kids who Kearse arrested, the cops at the scene, the medical examiner. I mean, if Joe is carted off as dead, there's an autopsy, right?
Hold up.
Shane said. What?
Didn't you say that there was some kind of issue with the death certificate?
A bureaucratic snafu. And stop plucking at your lip, please. Shane almost smiled.
There are holes in what I'm saying. I admit that. I could ask Kearse to see the autopsy photos.
Which he won't give you.
I can be pretty resourceful.
Don't be. Oh, and if they went to this much trouble, who's to say they couldn't doctor up some autopsy photos, too?
Good point.
I was being sarcastic. Maya shook her head. He's dead, Shane. Joe is dead.
Or he's messing with you.
Maya mulled that over for a few moments. Or, she said, someone is. Chapter 18. Soccer Day was like something out of a nostalgic American movie that was just a little too perfect, too Norman Rockwell to be authentic. There were tents and booths and games and rides. There were laughs and cheers and referee whistles and music. Food trucks offered up burgers and sausages and ice cream and tacos. You could buy pretty much anything in the town's green and white colors. T-shirts, caps, hoodies, polos, decals, water bottles, coffee mugs, keychains, fold-out chairs. Even the bounce house and inflatable slides were green and white. Every grade had set up their own activity booth. The seventh grade girls applied temporary tattoos. The eighth grade boys had a radar gun and goalie net so you could see the speed of your kicks. The girls' sixth grade had set up a face painting booth. That was where Maya and Lily found Alexa. When Alexa spotted them, she dropped her paintbrush and ran toward them, yelling,
"Lily! Hey!"
Lily, who had been holding her mother's hand, let go now. She giggled and covered her mouth with her tiny hands and quivered with that level of anticipation and joy that only little children can reach. The quivering and giggles grew as Lily's cousin barreled toward them. The giggles grew into shrieking laughs when Alexa scooped Lily off the ground. Maya stood there, a definite spectator in this greeting, and smiled.
"Lily! Aunt Maya!"
It was Daniel now hurrying toward them. Eddie trailed behind his son, a smile on his face, too. The scene felt so unreal to Maya, almost obscene in the middle of the personal chaos. But that was okay. The world has lines and fences. More than anything, Maya wanted to keep these three children on the right side of them. Daniel gave his aunt a quick kiss on the cheek on his way to Lily. He took her from his sister and hoisted her high in the air. The sound of Lily's laugh, a sound of pure, undiluted innocence, made Maya pull up. When, she wondered, was the last time she had heard her daughter make a sound like that?
"Can we take her on the rides, Aunt Maya?"
Alexa asked. "We'll be careful," Daniel added. Eddie moved up next to Maya. "Sure," Maya said. "You need some money?"
"We got it,"
Daniel said, and they were off. Maya gave Eddie a quick smile. Her former brother-in-law looked better today, clean-shaven and clear-eyed. He kissed her cheek. No smell of booze. Maya turned her gaze back on the three kids walking away. Daniel had put Lily down between Alexa and himself. Lily held onto Daniel with her right hand, Alexa with her left.
"Beautiful day," Eddie said.
Maya nodded. It was indeed. The sun was shining as though on a director's cue. Here was the American dream, spread out before Maya like a warm blanket, and the overwhelming feeling for her was that she didn't belong here, that her very presence was a dark cloud blocking that glowing light. "Eddie?" His hand cupped his eyes to keep the sun out. He turned toward her. "Claire wasn't cheating on you." His eyes welled up so fast he had to look away. He hunched over, and for a second, Maya worried that he might be crying. She reached out, wanting to put a hand on his shoulder, but she stopped short and let the hand fall to her side.
"You're sure?" he said.
"Yes."
"And that phone?"
"Do you remember my, troubles with that combat tape that got released?"
"Yes, of course."
"There was more to them."
"What do you mean?"
"The guy who leaked it."
"Corey the Whistle?" Eddie said.
"Right. He didn't release the audio." Eddie looked confused. "I think Claire talked him out of it."
"That audio?" Eddie said. "It would have made it worse for you?"
"Yes." Eddie nodded, but he didn't ask what was on it.
"Claire was so upset when that scandal broke. We all were. We were worried about you."
"Claire took it a step further."
"How?"
"She contacted Corey. She hooked up with his organization." There was no reason to go into Claire's possible motives with Eddie. Maybe Claire worked with Corey as quid pro quo for leaving Maya alone. Maybe Corey, who could be persuasive and charming, had convinced her that helping him take down the Burkett family was the moral and just thing to do. Didn't matter in the end. "Claire started to gather dirt on the Burketts," she said, "to help Corey's organization take them down."
"Do you think that's what got her killed?"
Maya looked over at her daughter. Alexa's whole team had gathered around Lily to ooh and ah. They were taking turns putting green and white face paint on her, and even at this distance, Maya could feel her daughter's joy. "Yes."
"I don't understand," Eddie said. "Why didn't Claire tell me?"
Maya kept her eyes on the children, playing her part as the silent sentinel. She could feel Eddie's gaze, but she kept silent. Claire hadn't told him because she wanted to keep him safe. In doing so, in keeping Eddie completely ignorant, Claire had, in all likelihood, saved his life. She had loved her husband. She had loved him very much. Jean-Pierre was a stupid fantasy that would have curdled in the light of reality like turned milk. Claire, the loving pragmatist, had seen that, even if Maya, so impetuous with her own love life, couldn't. Claire had loved Eddie. She had loved Daniel and Alexa. She had loved this life with its soccer days and face painting under the bright sun. Do you remember anything unusual, Eddie? Anything that might fit into this?
Like I told you before, she started working later. She was distracted. I would ask her what was wrong, but she didn't want to tell me.
His voice grew soft. She told me not to worry. The kids finished the face painting and started toward the carousel. Did she ever mention a man named Tom Douglas? Eddie thought about it.
No. Who is he?
He's a private detective.
Why would she go to him?
Because the Burkettes have been paying him off. Did you ever hear her talk about Andrew Burkett? He frowned.
Joe's brother who drowned?
Yes.
No. What does he have to do with it?
I don't know yet. But I need you to do something.
Name it.
Look at everything again with fresh eyes. Her travel records, her personal files, any place she may have hid things. Whatever. She was trying to take down the Burkettes. She found out that they were paying off this Tom Douglas, and I think that was the catalyst for something bigger. Eddie nodded.
I will.
They both stood there and watched Daniel hoist Lily onto a carousel horse. Daniel stayed on one side, Alexa on the other. Lily beamed.
Look at them,
Eddie said. Just... Maya nodded, afraid to speak. Eddie had said that death followed her, but it probably wasn't that simple.